Hey team, welcome to another episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast, the podcast where we actually explore the minds of leaders from all around the agriculture and agribusiness space about what it takes to lead intentionally in this industry today. My friends, if there's some value in here for you today, we ask you to subscribe to the podcast, share this with someone who needs to hear the message of what it takes to be intentional. Let's get into the show. Hey team, welcome back to another great episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast. This is your host, Mark Jewell, and I'm on today joined with Jim Ed from Netafim. Jim, thanks for being on here, man.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here today.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun conversation. Let's dive right in. What does it mean for you, Jim, to be intentional?
You know, I think that being intentional is really about having a purpose. So whenever you start managing a project or managing a role or people is to communicate what your intentions are and be able to, you know, identify things that they're interested in as well as not just the drive of the company, but to lead with a purpose.
I love it. That's a great, we've had that come up a couple of times lately, people talking about, you know, intention being purpose, being deliberate, right? Being that kind of, it's something that we mean to do, right?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. It's not something that just happens.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the part that's the most challenging about this. Ever since I started studying intentional leadership, this has become prevalent to me. The more I study it, the more ways I find out that maybe I'm not, right? It shows me because I'm now measuring against a higher standard of what intention really looks like. It shows me how hard it is to pull it off, you know, how much time and, for lack of a better word, how much intention is really required, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you apply intention into your day to day?
So I think a really good example is in my current role, I have a lot of dotted lines between people, but you know, my hard line is to my manager, and so I need a lot more support from everybody that I have a dotted line underneath me in order to achieve my goals. Mm. And so an example is we utilize Monday.com. Mm-hmm. And so I was just on a call yesterday and actually this morning as well with our regional strategy manager for the Americas. And, you know, we outlined all of our tasks for the year that we want to accomplish. And so I think it's, you know, keeping all those in mind every day when you get up and start the day.
Yeah. Wonderful, man. What does it look like for you over the course of your career being involved with, I'm sure, some cultures that operated intentionally and maybe some that didn't operate so intentionally? How did that impact you? How did it make you want to show up and go to work?
I think being intentional has definitely, in companies that I work for with that culture, mm-hmm. it's probably more positive for me. Just from a standpoint that you're much more focused versus there was one company that I worked for in the crop insurance industry that I would say we weren't very intentional. We were very reactionary based and probably weren't as focused. And it was much harder to achieve success in your role when you're not intentional about it.
Yeah. Do you think that just gets driven from the top down? I mean, if we have unintentional leaders at the top of the organization, does that just permeate throughout the whole business?
I would definitely agree with that. You know, my direct manager in that role where it wasn't very intentional, was more intentional, but his boss was not necessarily. And so it kind of led itself to a culture of what I would say lack of planning.
And this is what happens by definition. Our def like the reason we need to put focus on intentional leadership is when we have those moments in life, those phases or seasons in life, when we're not being intentional about planning. Just take planning, as simple as it sounds. And planning is not easy. It takes time. You have to allocate minutes of your day, hours of your day, weeks of your month to actually go plan things, right? Whether individually or as a team. And I think a lot of people skim over this because our days are so full of Zoom calls and phone calls and driving in your truck and meetings with customers, growers, et cetera. There's so much going on that people don't have a lot of time left over. So what they don't realize is it's like, if what it's almost like you have to run it like a 401k, right? You don't notice that it comes out of your paycheck.
Right. Yeah.
Like you look at it on a pay stub, you know, whether you get a physical one or once a month, or you get a digital one, you'll notice that it's on there, but you don't notice it from your pay.
Right.
And to me, being intentional has got to become like that, right? Like we need to have times blocked into the month to sit down and say, this is what we're doing. My wife and I have the last week of each quarter blocked. Nobody gets there. Kids don't get it. Customers don't get it. The business doesn't get it. Like that week is our week every 90 days to go focus on, okay, we got to run the king and queen got to run the kingdom here.
Mm-hmm.
What do we take that intentional time away, whether here at home or we go somewhere, but there's some intentional time that's going to happen there. Now we don't even think about it. At first it was hard to implement that, right? But now we don't even think about it.
Yeah. As you know, if you don't, then the next time you look up, it's 2 or 3 weeks later and you go, wow, did I really get all done that I needed to get done during those 2 or 3 weeks? Or did I just kind of buzz through it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's not like, so I used to do some Muay Thai fighting back in my 30s, right? I'll still do as a workout. I don't do any, I generally don't get in fights anymore. But I, when you get into the ring, like you can prepare, you do the best you can to get into shape. You practice, right? You practice your moves. You try to get as good as you can. But as soon as you step into that ring and the ref leaves the middle and it's just you and one other person, like the plan is out the window within short order, right?
Right.
Because you got a plan and he's got a plan, you know? And so at the end of the day, like it happens really quickly. And then life is the same way, right? Like we have a go-to-market plan. You're bringing a product to market right now. You've got a plan for that. Well, guess what? I mean, the market may throw a curveball right in front of you and you didn't see it coming.
Yeah, I stepped into this role almost a year ago exactly. And I thought it was going to be so much easier than it was. And it's proven to be a lot more challenging than what I initially expected that it would be, just because of you know that entrance into the market and you know what are all the objections that you're going to get that you know you hadn't already accounted for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's always so many things that get thrown in the way, man. So I'm curious, you know, what's been your experience either with the current company or past companies as it pertains to being able to attract and retain good people? You know, what works for you? What's made you want to stay? What's made you want to leave?
And I think that's one of the most important things that's going on in our industry right now is the ability to retain good people, because there gets to be so much outside noise of other things happening and going on that if you let it consume you, you go, well, gosh, you know, this sucks. I don't want to be here. And then if you really get to thinking about it, you go, well, you know, everywhere has its problems. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, one of the things that I've looked at whenever I had a change in role about 4 years ago within the company where I had a territory and I was Boy, I mean, I had it all lined up for it was going to print money the next year, right? And then in around Thanksgiving, my boss calls me and he says, "Hey, we're gonna change your territory up." And they give me this territory that's really, really difficult, has some difficult customers, and totally through my plan that I had already generated for the next year into shambles. Man. And I almost left over it. But then the culture that we have here at NetFM, as far as I think we do a really good job of building a family within our company. Mm-hmm. And so you have your teammates and I mean, they're all close friends of mine besides the fact that I work with them. And so I think, you know, a culture of quote family, our benefits are outstanding here. I think that, you know, benefits become a very important part of that. Because if you don't have good benefits, I don't think you have much of an anchor to really hold people there. You know, it doesn't matter how much family it is. If there aren't good core benefits to working for a company, I think that's one of, for me, that's like the key thing that probably holds me here is the fact that, you know, we've got a great 401k that's unmatched in the industry. We've got, you know, wonderfully affordable health insurance and you know, those things are, and I think especially in today's climate with all the economic issues that we're going through, those are really important to people.
Sure. Yeah. Those things are really important to people, just to have all the blocking and tackling in place that are really dependable. As a small business owner, that's one of the biggest challenges. Often one of the things that makes it really hard for me to bring in good people is that overhead that immediately gets created around health insurance. And I mean, just as a small organization, we're never going to be able to compete even with a mid-sized organization if we're just putting, you know, stacking up 401k and health benefits, which are really important things. It's a big challenge. We have to get really creative.
like my health insurance, if it was unsubsidized by the company, is, you know, $2,000 a month.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big thing.
Yep. I definitely know that because nobody subsidizes mine.
and I pay about $400 a month.
Right. Yeah. It's quite extreme when you stack it up that way. And that's the nice thing about group buying power, right?
Right. Yeah.
Hey team, please forgive this quick intrusion into the podcast, but I have a really important announcement that I want everybody to get their earballs on. And that is that we have an upcoming Thriving Leader event coming up August 21st and 22nd. The Thriving Leader is our flagship program. We have run this thing over 135 times across the broad scope of agriculture. Thousands of people have gone through this, and our coaching programs and our public events each year are free. We only run two of these per year because of that. And your next chance to get access is coming up on August 21 and 22. The next one will not be until 2025. So we hope to see you. It's in Kansas City. Head on over to thriving-leader.com. That's thriving-leader.com. You get all the details and to book a meeting to see how you can get free access for you and some of your team coming up at the Thriving Leader in Kansas City, Missouri, August 21st and 22nd, 2024. We'll see you there. Who's been somebody that you've admired over the course of your career, Jim?
I don't know if you know this guy or not, but Pat McDonald, whenever I worked back in at Rome Polonc, and then later I worked for him actually directly when we became Aventis. And I moved into to RTP, to the home office, has been a very influential person in my life from a standpoint of, you know, we've all been given goals that didn't seem attainable. And he always has had a way of mentoring where, you know, just just eat that elephant one bite at a time, you know, and stay focused on the end goal. And then once, you know, as long as you stay focused on that end goal and are thinking about how you're going to get there.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the key. And like that guy can churn out more stuff in 4 hours than, you know, the average person can in probably 10. And so just, I've always wanted to strive to be able to be that person that can get my tasks done in shorter than the 8 hour day, because there's always other tasks to do, you know?
Yeah. Do you think for him, was it just sheer focus that allowed him to churn out more? I'm often jealous of people. I think I look at people that can just crank it out, man, you know, and I struggle to focus that much in that short of a time frame. So just, do you think that's what it was, or just a higher standard for achievement for him, or what?
I think it's focus. I really do think it's focus. I mean, he would go into his office and there'd be times that he, you know, he had a very open door policy, but there would be certain times where he blocked and he worked. I mean, he churned during those, you know, couple hours during the day and nobody bothered him.
Yeah.
And I think that focus is probably the key.
You know, there are times now when we really just need to go leave the phone in another room. Right. Sit down, you know, at your computer, if that's where you're doing work right now, and just crank it out. And then sometimes you almost got to just disconnect from the internet so you don't get the notifications. Right. They turn off the Wi-Fi altogether.
Yeah.
Just sit down and hammer it out. If it's something that doesn't require you to be on the web or something. Right. It's I was just thinking about this earlier. I was being very productive. I mean, for a couple hours, really, I cranked out a lot of stuff here just a couple hours ago. And we're launching a new app. So I was working with the developer on the app, and I'm working with getting the podcast playlists and different things put together. We've got customers that we're enrolling into our coaching programs. We've got a lot of things going on, handling it all, feeling like I'm doing a good job of quarterbacking all of it. But then I also realized, like, I mean, there's three other things that just didn't get done because I'm bouncing from my phone to the computer, to this thing, to that thing, you know, and I'm like, man, am I actually losing efficiency?
Well, and I think one of the things that is a real challenge right now is that more and more tools are online based. And so it becomes harder and harder to disconnect and take that time, because you have to have a connection to the internet to do the tools that you're, you know, to address the tasks that you're working on.
Yeah.
And so I really like locally based tools on my machine versus stuff that's online.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what's been one of your biggest hurdles that you've had to overcome, Jim?
I think probably my biggest hurdle is that I have tendencies towards workaholic, where I just, you know, dedicate myself to my work. And so it's hard to have, it's very hard for me to have a good work-life balance.
Hmm. Hmm. That can be a big challenge. What have you had to do to overcome that?
You just have to make yourself, and it's very hard. It's something I struggle with every day. You know, you come home from a trip and you duck in your office that you're just going to do a couple things, and the next thing you do, you look up and it's 3 to 4 hours later. And so sometimes when I come home, I don't go by my home office. I just walk right on in and go in the house and don't do that, because otherwise I know that I'll be there 3 to 4 hours.
We have to create boundaries around some of those things, don't we?
We do, for sure. And it's hard because, you know, there's all these things in your head going 90 miles an hour that you know that you have to get done. And it's really hard to shut that off.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that we coach on, and then Christine, my wife, and I talk about this with our clients a lot as well. And this is something that we implemented as a practice because we're both home-based. So unless we're out producing an event somewhere, which is about a quarter of the time, but that's 75% of the time we're working out of the home office. It's very easy. My office is right off the living room and the kitchen. you know, and it's in an open area. So it's very easy just to come sit down. You know, it's, I tell her she gets lost in the vortex. She'll disappear up there.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I'm like, hey, I thought we were going to go have coffee. And it's like 4 hours later, you know, or we're going to go work out. And 4 hours later, I haven't even heard from her. So, but we implemented something at the end of the day. If we're both here at the house, no distraction, we get outside, we go for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we just, it's like a mile, like 0.9 miles up to the little clubhouse in our neighborhood. We live near a golf course. We just walk up there and we walk back. Sometimes we take the dogs. Sometimes we don't. If we have more time, we do the loop, which is like a 5K loop. It's about 3 miles. We'll do that before we go into the kitchen to start making the supper. Because the other thing, and I don't know if you guys struggle with this, but the other thing that's really easy when we're just home is to just roll into the kitchen. We've got a great kitchen for entertaining and preparing food. Crack open a bottle of wine, right? Maybe sit on the patio if it's warm out, if it's summer. And that's fun too. But it's really easy for that to become the every night experience. And now you start depending on, you know, like the wine experience to kind right. of wind down, to right. wind down, which I find impacts my productivity tomorrow.
Right.
So, but having some sort of a ritual, right, at the end of the day or in between things to be able to stop, maybe connect with your loved ones, whatever the case may be, I think is really important.
Yeah, I do too. It's, but it is definitely hard.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, man. So just curious, what are you working on right now that's exciting that people should know about?
So in this new role that I took a year ago, I'm launching a new product where we're separating solids out of manure in beef, dairy, and swine CAFO operations. Mm-hmm. And so it's really groundbreaking technology. It's a new way to apply manure. There's like so many environmental benefits to it. And so it's something that I have a lot of passion around. I actually have worked for about 5.5 years to kind of create the position that I'm in and then was asked to fill this role. So, it's a really exciting role that I'm in.
Fantastic. Do you have, I know you mentioned a lot of dotted line folks. Do you have a team that you're working with as well that, you know, directly reports to you or anything like that?
So I don't have any direct hardline reports, mm-hmm. but I have our team of dealer relationship managers and then mm-hmm. also agronomic relationship managers that I work with day in, day out in order to better prepare them to sell the product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's almost harder, right? Because you don't have direct supervision. It almost takes more intention
right, it does.
To get results. Yeah,
it does because, you know, they have all of their own goals that are actually, you know, more of an overarching goal. And so, you know, they're focused on just hitting a number at the end of the day. And I'm interested in hitting my number. Right. And so I guess part of the difficulty becomes how to build the passion with them that they want to hit, you know, they want to sell SDIE as part of hitting their overarching goal.
Right. Because I assume they have other things.
Correct.
Right. So they may have a favorite product or incentives towards another product line that.
Right.
So now you got to get attention toward your thing as well.
Yes. Cause we have an alfalfa initiative also that is separate from my initiative. And so that they have goals associated with that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then their overarching territory goal.
So I imagine we can have a whole other conversation about this. Maybe we will someday. But what, how do you go about capturing the attention? There's two levels of attention that you need. One is your own internal team and getting attention and buy-in towards the thing that you're trying to produce and sell. Then the second one is the customer level, right? And that's their job is to go fight for that attention to get the adoption of the product at the customer level too, right? How do you tackle that internally to try to get mind share?
So I think one of the most effective ways that I do it personally is that I involve them by making joint calls with them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can go and make joint calls with them and then they sell a couple of the systems, then they become much more, you know, much more acquainted with the product as well as the process that it takes to sell it, because it's a really different kind of sell. And so once they become more comfortable with that, then it's a lot easier to get them to just almost seem like it's second nature to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So taking the hands-on approach, actually getting out there on site with them is very intentional. I like it. Cool, man. Well, this has been a really fun and fast conversation. Somehow we've had a half an hour go by here today.
But oh, really?
any last thought? Yeah. Just about, but any last thoughts, that you would, that you'd want to share with folks, before we bring it in for a landing?
I think just that, you know, when you contacted me about doing this podcast, that I kind of questioned, you know, well, am I that intentional and stuff? And then, you know, you get to thinking about the things that you do. And I think a lot of times we probably gloss over, the fact that we are, you know, intentional on some things, but, you know, as you mentioned, you know, you want to kind of get to that place where it's just second nature. Yeah. And I think that, you know, in some places I'm there, but then in other places I'm not. And mm-hmm. so I guess my goal is just to keep working there to get there in every area I want to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's such a great insight. I'm going to spend a minute right on that. Just a really good insight there, because most of us are walking around throughout the course of the day, 60 to 65,000 thoughts running through our brain every day. And the vast majority of them, not positive.
Yeah, right.
Right. We were trained from a very young age to beat ourselves up, be self-critical. We're not always, but often we are focused on the things that we're not doing well, the ways that we're not executing. I'm not sitting here right now, you know, jumping off when we jump off this call, I'm not going to go to work on the things that I've already done. I'm not thinking about the stuff that the 13 things I crossed off my list today. I'm thinking about the 3 I didn't.
Right.
Right. And then I'm thinking about the fact, I don't have time to do it, because now I got to jump in the truck and go pick up my kids from school. And then once they get home from school, it's going to be disruptive. And then how am I going to get anything else done? Right. My mind, like most everybody else, goes to that. Right. And so we judge ourselves critically and we don't think of ourselves as intentional. And what I would encourage you and everybody else to do is to take a moment and do an inventory of the places that you actually are. And if you can't come up with one, find somebody in your life that can actually show you where you are. We are more often than we're not, because we're often all well-intended.
Mm-hmm.
Even when we do things wrong or we do things poorly, we generally aren't doing things poorly from a malicious standpoint, right? We're not trying to hurt anybody. We're not trying to be bad. We screw up because we're human.
Well, and I have a perfect example from yesterday. So yesterday I had a really good day that I got a lot of stuff crossed off my list, but we're working on kicking off some research projects with some universities, and we've been struggling on getting them paid and everything. And I mean, how I ended my day yesterday is I called my manager and I'm like, you know, hey, I'm sorry, I didn't get that vendor master data form filled, you know, completed. And now we're going to have to go through these other steps. And my manager was like, hey, don't worry, man. I got you. You know, you've got all these other things that you got done. Mm-hmm. And it kind of talked me off the ledge a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We've got to focus on some areas where we are doing it well. And we're going to be most motivated to be intentional for others, because most of us are so servant minded. We're here to serve others. You also got to be intentional for yourself.
Yes.
You know, so good, man. This has been a fun conversation. Thanks for letting me spend a little extra time on that.
You bet.
It's good, man. Thanks for being on here.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it, Mark. Good to talk to you.
I hope today's episode brought you a great deal of value about what it takes to lead life and lead in this industry with intention. If you want to go deeper on the topic
of leading with intention, I encourage you to head on over to intentionaltoolbox.com and get the 7 free tools that will help you to lead your life in all areas with a greater deal of intention. That's intentionaltoolbox.com. And finally, if this message resonated today, if there's something in here that you got value from, I promise you there's someone else in your life who also would get value from this. So please share the episode, share the podcast, and make sure that you subscribe.